the part of the International Crime Syndicate? And what did Jeff mean by what he said? Is he really worried that the Mafia might in some way try to hinder our global conversion plan? No matter how she tried to forget the matter or ignore the persistent questions that percolated through her mind, she could not drive the matter out of her consciousness. One night she even dreamed that Dan was alive, not on the moon but in Sicily, running a vastly complex criminal organization instead of his own Astro Corporation. When she awoke that morning, troubled and bleary-eyed, she made her decision. She phoned Jeff Robertson, from her apartment, not her office at GEC headquarters. For several heartbeats, the phone's screen remained blank. Jane sat at the little curved rosewood desk in the room she used as an office and realized that it was only a little past 4 in the morning in Houston. Finally, the screen brightened and Robertson's puffy-eyed face appeared, grinning curiously. "You know, I'm an early riser, Jane, honey," he said amiably. "But this is kind of ridiculous, isn't it?"
"I'm sorry, Jeff," she blurted.
"If the phone had said it was anybody but you, I'd have cussed him out and gone back to sleep.
I just couldn't put off calling you any longer."
"It's about what I told your Italian friend, huh?"
"Yes. How did you—"
"I was wondering how long it'd take you to gnaw on that bone."
"Are you really serious?" Jane asked. "Is there an actual threat from some international crime syndicate?"
"You bet there is.
It's hard to see how criminals could get in the way of the GEC.
"That's part of what makes them successful," Robertson said. "The victim doesn't even know he's being infected. Real parasites."
"What should we do?"
"First thing you ought to do is hop on over here so we can talk in private, one-on-one. I got a lot to show you, but I don't trust phone links."
Jane immediately thought that Rafe would find it suspicious if she suddenly took off for Houston. She said,
"I could take a long weekend, a sort of mini-vacation."
"At your home in Horseshoe Bay?"
"Yes."
"Got room for a weekend guest?"
"For you, Jeff, anytime."
"I'll have to bring the wife. She don't trust me too far." Jane laughed.
"Of course. Bring Helen along with you."
"I was getting frantic, that's why," Kate Williams nearly shouted at the phone screen.
Her sister's face stared out at her, eyes smoldering with sullen distrust. Kimberly Williams was 4 years younger than her sister. Even with her flaming red hair cropped militarily short, she looked enough like Kate so that a stranger would quickly realize they were sisters. But Kim looked used, worn, pale and sick. Except for her eyes, they were fiery, tawny, defiant, the eyes of a caged leopard.
"You didn't have to call the fucking police," Kim said.
"I hadn't heard from you in a week,"
Kate replied, her inner anger building.
"You hadn't shown up in the clinic for 10 days.
In the 2.5 seconds it took for Kim's reply to come to her, Kate studied her sister's face. No bruises. Eyes looked clear, not dilated.
"I was with one of their damn doctors. It was his idea to take a week off and go have some fun."
Kate pulled in a deep breath, trying to calm herself, trying to avoid the explosion that so often erupted when she and Kim talked to one another.
"I'm clean,"
Kim added, less belligerently.
"The doctor wouldn't let me get started again."
That's good, said Kate.
Again the transmission lag. Then Kim's pale, angry face softened.
"He didn't want me stoned."
She almost giggled.
"I had to be awake and alert to please him."
Christ, Kate thought. There's always the damned body tax. You'd think by now a man and a woman could work together or be friends without sex.
"Listen, Kim," she heard herself saying. "How'd you like to come up here for a while?"
"To the moon? Leave the clinic?"
"I can arrange for your treatment to continue here. I'm going to be staying here for a while. Why don't you come up and stay with me?"
She waited for her words to register on her sister's face.
"You really mean it, Kate? You want me to stay with you?"
"I love you, Kimberly. I know I haven't been the best big sister in the world to you, but I want us to be together now."
Kate had not expected the reaction she got. Kimberly broke into tears. The two sisters cried together, separated by 250,000 miles, but feeling closer than they had in years. It was an hour later, All the details of Kim's trip to Alphonsus carefully worked into the computer, when Kate signed the authorization for scrapping a long list of defunct equipment. Computers notwithstanding, such orders had to be signed. The legal department insisted on a personal signature of authorization. Kate signed the thin plastic sheet, paper being non-existent on the moon, with only a cursory glance at the list of equipment to be scrapped. She noticed that it included a full-sized rocket hopper, but she paid no real attention to that. She was thinking instead that it would be good for Kim to be away from her doctor friend. And with Kim at Alphonsus, Kate herself would not have to pay court to Raffaello Gaetano anymore. It had been a long time since Dan had piloted a hopper. Inside his pressure suit, he felt a thin sheen of nervous cold sweat as the astro-technician walked him around the ungainly vehicle. The hopper looked worn and battered. Maybe it really is ready for the scrap pile, Dan thought as he walked around it. Sitting on six splay-footed aluminum legs, it was little more than an open grillwork platform, with a T-shaped control console up front where two spacesuited people could stand, and a trio of bulky cargo containers, their gold anodized finishes pitted and faded. Underneath there were six small rocket nozzles, looking black and hard-used, evenly spaced around a long flat propellant tank. The craft's minimal electronics were built into the forward console. Spare oxygen bottles were strapped against the first cargo container. "You read the manual?" The tech's voice in Dan's helmet earphones sounded dubious. The young man knew that what he was doing was illegal, and the wreck of a scrapped hopper anywhere near Astro's launch facility would swiftly be pinned to him. "You saw me go through it right on your own screen," Dan said. "Pretty damned fast, if you ask me. I'm a speed reader. Besides, I can pull up the manual on the control panel screen, can't I? Hell of a time to be reading the manual when you're spinning into the ground." "I was flying these rigs before you were born," Dan snapped. "Yeah, sure. You came up here with Armstrong and Aldrin, didn't you?" Dan laughed. "No, H.G. Wells." The two spacesuited men walked slowly around the hopper, checking it out by eye. It looked old and weary to Dan, but the computer said all its systems were fully functional. "Come on," the technician chivied. "I ain't got all day for this." "He's scared somebody will see us and realize that this clunker is supposed to be heading for the recyclers," Dan knew. "Okay," he said, drawing in a deep breath. "Guess she won't look any better than she does now." He climbed up the two-rung ladder, while the tech quickly went to his little tractor and wordlessly started back toward the launching facility about a kilometer away. Dan plugged his suit radio into the console and asked for clearance to take off. Hoppers were always flitting around the lunar cities. The only need for traffic control was when they were located near a launch facility. "Stand by, hopper," said a man's voice. "Got a tour boat about to leave." Dan turned entirely around so he could watch the passenger spacecraft lift off more than a kilometer away. The launch was not a spectacular display as it would have been on Earth. No thunder of rocket engines, no slow, majestic rise of the booster out of the clouds of exhaust and steam. The big, bulbous spacecraft merely seemed to flick itself off the moon's surface like a flea jumping. One instant it was sitting on the launch pad, the next it was gone, flung into the dark sky so quickly that Dan lost sight of it in the restricted view from inside his helmet. A small dust storm swirled lazily around the pad in the wake of the launching, the thin clouds slowly sinking back to the ground in the gentle lunar gravity. "Okay, hopper, you are clear to take off." Dan reached for the pistol grip control bar, feeling both a little scared and a little exhilarated. "Hopper taking off," he said into his helmet mic. The craft shuddered as he thumbed the ignition switch, then rose slowly off the ground. Cautiously, Dan turned it toward the tempo shelter he had been living in, and started gaining altitude to clear the first level of the ring wall. He grinned to himself. It had been a long time. But now he remembered that back in the old days, flying one of the hoppers had always reminded him of flying on a magic carpet. "I'm heading back to Earth," he muttered to himself. Then he added, grinning, "Even the longest journey is started with a single theft." 24. "But I thought that when drugs were decriminalized," said Jane, "organized crime went pretty much out of business." Jeff Robertson gave her a pitying smile.